From west to east and kingdom to kingdom, you're listening to the Diz Unplugged Connecting with Walt podcast. Connecting with Walt is brought to you by Dreams Unlimited Travel, experts at helping you plan the perfect Disney vacation. Visit them on the web at dreamsunlimitedtravel.com. Hello and happy Hanukkah, Merry Christmas, and happy holidays from the Diz Unplugged Connecting with Walt podcast. I am your very merry host and Diz historian, Michael Bowling, and I am joined by my co-host and producer, Craig Ebenezer Scrooge Williams. Craig, how are you this holiday season?
I'm very good. How are you, Michael?
I'm doing very well. Thank you. So are you as excited as I am to share this gift of a very special holiday episode of Connecting with Walt with our Connecting with Walt family?
Oh, yeah, I absolutely am. So it was a pleasure getting to record this episode. And, you know, if only everyone could have been there with us to hear the stories that went beyond when the microphone was actually rolling. So the audio was rolling and recording. So we had a lot of good stories being told between us and our special guest for this episode.
Even as the rain fell upon us.
Yes.
So Craig and I were fortunate to have spent time with Disney historian and author Jim Corcus. And we were at Disney Springs at Walt Disney World, where he shared some wonderful stories of Walt Disney and Christmas time at Walt's studio, at Disneyland, and with Walt's family. So put another log in the fireplace, pour yourself some hot chocolate or eggnog, and sit back and relax with us as Disney historian Jim Corcus shares a fond look back at Walt Disney and Christmas time. Well, hello, all of our listeners to Connecting with Walt. This is Craig and I, Michael Bowling. We are sitting here at Disney Springs. Yes, this is a Christmas miracle. It is not January, yet you can see in your iTunes feed that there is an episode, a very special episode of Connecting with Walt for you. This is our little Christmas and Hanukkah gift from all of us to all of you. And we have an even bigger gift for you, because we are sitting here with Disney historian and author Jim Corcus. And Jim has written many, many books. I own just about all of them, on the different aspects of anything you want to know about Disney history. What is fascinating about what Jim writes is that there are stories to everything about Disney, from the trash cans all the way to your favorite theme park attraction, to the shows, to everything. And Jim collects the backstories of all of those, because those stories are getting lost in the annals of Disney time. And Jim's really made it one of his life goals to really collect those stories for us before they're completely lost to time. And what we're going to talk about today, since we're in the holiday season, is how did Disney and Christmas get so closely associated with each other? For my generation growing up, we watched, you know, Uncle Walt every week on TV, and we look forward to that holiday Christmas show every year when Jiminy Cricket would sing from all of us to all of you a very Merry Christmas. And, you know, the Disney parks are never so magical as at Christmas time, whether it's the Magic Kingdom or here at Walt Disney World or Disneyland out in California. So, Jim, how did was Disneyland really the first theme park that celebrated Christmas? Tell us the story of how Walt brought Christmas into the park.
Well, ho, ho, ho to all the listeners out there. And yes, we're having a very Merry Christmas and happy holiday season out here at Walt Disney World in Florida, although sometimes when it's 80 degrees or more, it's hard to realize that it is that holiday season. But yes, even as far back as 1940s, Walt was talking about how Christmas was such a magical time of the year because it makes us forget our day-to-day troubles and activities and sort of kicks the Scrooge out of us to do that. And of course, with Walt, he never expected any presents. That came from his background. But he loved giving them. Loved giving them to so many people. You know, he grew up on a small farm in Marceline, Missouri, and his family was really not well off. But he carried with him for the rest of his life those early memories of going out into the snow-covered woods and cutting down a Christmas tree, and then coming home and with his mom taking a string and making a string with popcorn and cranberries and all that to decorate. And it was Walt's job to cut little paper angels and make little foil ornaments for the tree there. But of course, Walt always used to joke that since they weren't well off, underneath the Christmas tree, what he could expect was some gift like underwear rather than a toy. But it was his older brother, Roy, who would save up a couple of extra pennies and buy Walt and his younger sister, Ruth, maybe a little gyroscopic top or something like that, so that there was always a little special Santa present there on Christmas. And Walt wanted to keep that spirit when he built the theme park Disneyland. And it's interesting you mentioned, you know, is that the first theme park to celebrate Christmas? Actually, the first theme park to celebrate Christmas is Santa Claus Land, where everything was themed to Santa Claus and Mother Goose and all of that. And that opened before Disneyland did. But boy, once Disneyland started to have Christmas, there was nothing to beat the band. And in fact, Disneyland opened in July 1955, and there were continual financial problems. In fact, just a month or two after they opened, they found that someone had stuck some unpaid bills in an empty drawer simply because they didn't have money to pay him at the time. Those bills ran almost close to $1 million.
Oh,
and so money was very, very tight, but Walt was not going to let the first Christmas at Disneyland slip by. And so there was a live Christmas tree out in front, just to the left side of Sleeping Beauty's castle, which was decorated. And Walt went to Dr. Charles Hurt, who was the musical choral director at University of Southern California, and had him bring some of his students. So they had a dozen Dickens-costumed Christmas carolers wandering around the park singing Christmas songs. And Dr. Hurt, by the way, was the one who eventually came up with the idea of candlelight processional. And they staged it on the train station steps so that it was high enough so that everybody could see, and also so that Walt could look out his apartment window above the firehouse and see that wonderful Christmas spectacle. There was even a Christmas tree on the front of the Mark Twain. And decorated lights along Main Street. So even in December 1955, when money was tight, Walt wanted people to celebrate Christmas. And I guess the famous story of the very first Christmas at Disneyland, December 55, was told by Jack Lindquist, a Disney legend, former president of Disneyland, who passed away this last year. He said he really finally understood what Disneyland was about when he was standing on Main Street on December 24th, at the time when the park was closing for the night, and he saw this family, a husband and a wife, and their little daughter who came up to maybe about the height of a knee, and they were looking in the Emporium windows. And the girl turned to the parents and said, "You know, Mommy, you're right. This is better than having Santa Claus come this year." And Jack said, "Boy, at that point, I knew what Disneyland really meant to people." And he says, "I tell that story because I want cast members to remember that for some people, this is their Christmas, coming to Disneyland." And so it's up to us to give them, in the spirit of Walt, the best gift that we can.
That's wonderful. And I know that's true for me. Shortly after my mother passed away, and she sort of was Christmas for us, and I was young when that happened, we went to Disneyland that first Christmas just so that we would have that magic, you know, in our lives at the holidays. So I understand what that little girl was saying. Now they didn't just limit, really Walt didn't limit the celebration of Christmas to just the park, because I know, like right now at the Walt Disney Family Museum, they have an exhibition of the studio Christmas cards, and we were talking before this podcast, you mentioned they even ran special comic strips during the Christmas holidays.
In order to build up circulation for newspapers over the holiday season, Disney, through King Features Syndicate, that was producing the Mickey Mouse comic strip and the Donald Duck comic strip, whatever, came up with the idea of a daily comic strip, Monday through Saturday, for the 6 weeks before Christmas Day. To have the Disney characters go on some type of adventure. For instance, Peter Pan rescuing Santa Claus, who had been kidnapped by Captain Hook and had to be saved by Christmas, and similar things. And so they didn't appear on the actual comic page. They appeared anywhere throughout the newspaper so that it encouraged people to hunt through the newspaper to try and find it so that they would see the ads from the various stores. And, of course, on Christmas Day, it would always get resolved with that happy ending. And that went on for many years. Of course, the Disney Studios produced some of the most beautiful Christmas cards of all time. And Walt kept a Rolodex of all of the children of the people who worked at the Disney Studio, as well as his friends and his professional contacts. And so a couple of months before Christmas, he would send his secretaries down to the soundstage, which became Santa's workshop, where every kid would get one big toy and one small toy wrapped up. And they would get that until they were age 12, and then they would get the Disney Studio Christmas card. And Walt would go down constantly to check to make sure that everything was being wrapped correctly and everything would be delivered. And Walt would hold a big Christmas party at the studio and run some of the Disney Christmas cartoons like 'Twas the Night Before Christmas, and I don't think people realize this, but the very first Mickey Mouse cartoon to be nominated for an Academy Award was one which was called Mickey's Orphans, and it takes place at Christmas, where Mickey and Minnie are celebrating Christmas, and then on their doorstep is dropped a basket full of orphan kittens. And they bring them in to celebrate Christmas. And unfortunately, Mickey gives them things like saws and hammers and drills. Well, again, his dad was a carpenter, so this was a great gift, and it was a practical gift. This is what Walt was used to, you know, at Christmas time. And, of course, the little kittens proceed to destroy the entire house and to harass Pluto wearing little antlers, being a reindeer, and Mickey being dressed up as Santa Claus for the very first time. And there were several cartoons, and Mickey's Good Deed, all of this, where And a lot of people don't realize that Walt was taking a huge risk on this, because if you make a Christmas cartoon, you can't re-release it in July. Right. There's only that short window of opportunity in which to release the cartoon. And also the fact that Disney, even then, was an international company. Some countries don't celebrate the same holidays that Disney does, or don't celebrate Christmas the way that America does. So, you know, taking quite a chance on that. And then it, at home, Walt had a two-story living room. And so his daughter Diane said, yes, on Christmas morning, she and her sister Sharon were up on the second floor, and they would run out, and they had what Diane called the Romeo-Juliet balcony. So a little area that overlooked, so you could look down into the living room, and here is this massive two-story tree that Walt had decorated with Lillian the night before. And Diane said they had to hang their stockings on the outside of their doors. And she said that's so Lillian could come in and fill the stockings without disturbing them or waking them up. And Diane said one of the first Christmases she remembers, and there's actually film of this existing, she is sitting underneath the Christmas tree surrounded by all of these mechanical toys that are moving, because Walt was so fascinated with that, and that led to the development of audio animatronics. And Diane is hitting them as quickly as she can to make them stop moving. And as she got older, Walt gave her gifts like jewelry or a little watch on the back that would say to Diane from Dad and all of that, and she kept those, and so those are still preserved over at the Disney Family Museum in San Francisco, which is a wonderful place to visit. And as you said, at this time of year, they run a special program about Walt and Christmas.
Exactly. And one of the things that they have during that program is they have home movies of Walt and the family. And one of the Christmas gifts they show is when Walt had the studio carpenters build a replica of Snow White's cottage in their backyard. And so when Sharon and Diane run out there, there's even a working phone in it. And so when they picked it up, it was Santa Claus at the other end asking how much they enjoyed the cottage. Of course, it was Walt portraying Santa Claus. And yeah, it's just wonderful. They have all those home films of Walt and the family at the holidays. And then they show a lot of the Christmas shorts you were just talking about, both from the television show I mentioned, as well as the ones that were in the theaters. They also have a new exhibit, and it is a model of the Carolwood home with the train, a model of the train running around it. So people wondered how did Walt get this train in under Lillian's flower bed. So now you can see the model of it. So so definitely worth a visit if you're in San Francisco during the holidays. And they do this every year. So, but,
and I'm glad you mentioned that little cottage. That was Diane's favorite Christmas gift. That lasted there for. Actually, the physical cottage itself still exists at that house today, out by that pool, although the inside has been gutted. And yes, this was the Christmas after Snow White and the Seven Dwarfs was released, because it was a huge hit. And so Walt had, plenty of money. So it was like, okay, let's do something special for the kids. And so, yes, built that little cottage. And Diane said it was about the size, the interior was the size of about a good-sized closet. But again, these are little kids. And they had a refrigerator in there that was stocked with these little cans and all of this. It had running water, had a little mushroom chimney on top, even though there was no fireplace for any. And there were these double doors, you know, for the entrance. And I don't know if you saw that in the home movies, but in one, Diane is leaning out of the top of the door, and her dad, who is filming, keeps encouraging her to lean further out so that there's no shadow on her face, and she falls right out, and he has to run to comfort her, and yes, you know, this is all right, and of course, Christmas was tied with a lot of special gifts, because at that same house, which was on Lyric Avenue, and Roy had the house right next door, because they got one of those prefab kits to build your own houses, so they were actually mirror images of each other. Walt loved dogs. He did not hate cats, by the way. Diane told me, you know, that's one of those urban myths out there. They had a cat, and the cat would come and curl up in his lap while he was reading scripts at night and all that. But Walt really loved dogs. However, his wife Lillian didn't care for dogs. He felt they were messy and smelly and all of that. So Walt, always liking a challenge, went and he did his research. You know, what is the cleanest dog? What is the dog that doesn't smell, you know, or shed, or all of this? And he came up with a Chow. And he did this huge presentation and all of this for Lillian. And Lillian says, well, that's all very interesting. She said, and if I ever get a dog, that might be the one I would get. But we're not getting a dog. And so Walt, of course, went out and got a Chow puppy, kept it over at Roy's house next door. And then on Christmas Day, when they were getting all of the presents, Walt snuck out to Roy's house, put the little puppy in a hat box and a huge ribbon around it, and put a little tag on it, and came in, and when nobody was looking, slipped it under the Christmas tree. And their niece, Walt's niece, was handing out the presents. It's something that I had to do when I was a kid. I don't know why they had great delight in that. Yes, go underneath the tree and find something for Aunt Edna and give her. There was never enough presents for Aunt Edna. So anyway, the niece pulls out this box and says, oh, look, there's one more. And it says, to Lily from Santa. And she starts to walk from the Christmas tree to over where Lily is sitting. And steam is coming out of Lillian's ears, because she thinks Walt has bought her a hat, because it's a hat box. And she felt Walt had terrible taste in hats. One time when they were driving in one of his convertibles, she ripped off the hat from his head and threw it out, you know. And Walt, being Walt, stopped the car, went back and got the hat. And then later he had it bronzed and given to her as an anniversary gift. So anyway, this poor little girl is walking across and she sees her aunt getting angrier and angrier and angrier, and just sets it on Lily's lap. And before Lily can say anything, the hat box moves. And she opens the hat box, and peeking out is this little Chow puppy, which she names Sunny. And Walt said, it was one of the biggest mistakes in my life, because this was before Diane was born. This became her child and had to sleep in the bed with us. And, you know, it was her dog from then on. And Walt loved telling this story at the studio. And so the animators incorporated that into the animated feature Lady and the Tramp, which is the only Disney film that begins and ends at Christmas.
Yes.
And, in fact, at Walt Disney World, when you're on Main Street, if you're near the Chapeau Shop, which is right next to Tony's Town Square Restaurant, the sign for the Chapeau Shop is the hat box from Lady and the Tramp, where Lady popped out. But you also mentioned, of course, something that was a holiday tradition in our family, was watching From All of Us to All of You, directed by a good friend of mine, Jack Hanna. and who directed an awful lot of the Donald Duck cartoons and the Chip and Dale cartoons and all of this. And he said, what we needed to do was the show was getting so expensive. Walt said, isn't there something we could do with these cartoons? So we came up with the idea of, we always send out Christmas cards from the Disney studio. Why don't we have a Christmas card? And then that Christmas card will then transition into that cartoon. And we'll do, we'll spend a couple of bucks on new animation of Jiminy Cricket introducing. What a lot of people don't realize is that Walt, being the marketer that he is, the last scene was to advertise the upcoming Disney animated feature that was going to be released that next year. And so each year, from all of us to all of you, the last scene was constantly changing so that it could advertise the new film that was coming out. And yes, it became a standard and a hit. And gosh, Disney and Christmas on TV, that goes back even further. That goes back to Christmas Day 1950 on NBC. Walt did his very first TV show, One Night in Wonderland there. Basically, he was doing this to test out to see if Disney would work on TV, and also to publicize Alice in Wonderland, which both he and Roy thought was gonna bomb big time. But if you do it on TV, maybe this will encourage people to go see this. And so, gosh, the most highest rated show. He was just showing, had Edgar Bergen and Charlie McCarthy on there. Diane and Sharon have a short scene in there as well. And, of course, it was sponsored by Coca-Cola, which is very connected with Santa Claus. And Santa Claus, at the very beginning, opens up these presents and 1 hour in Wonderland. And, showing this, it was so successful that all the other networks competed for the following year. And the following year, a lot of people don't realize this, is there was a second Walt Disney Christmas show. This time it was on CBS, sponsored by Johnson & Johnson, and it was promoting Peter Pan. And so we actually got to see Bobby Driscoll and Catherine Beaumont as Peter Pan and Wendy around there. And again, another huge, huge success. And so this is one of the things that led to that weekly Disney television show, because Walt saw, hey, I can do this. And the network saw, this brings in the ratings. And advertisers said, hey, I want to advertise, because people start to associate my product with, you know, the happiness of Disney. So, yes, and you know, in England, on Christmas Day, they always would do a Disney special. And, in fact, one of the most famous is they had Tom Baker, who was Doctor Who, dressed as Doctor Who, presenting segments of Disney cartoons and segments from Disney features. And it was quite the tradition in the UK, is that because they didn't have the weekly Disney television show, my gosh, Christmas, we've got to stay home and watch Disney on TV. Because I think we're of the same generation, Michael. In those days, you didn't have VCRs. Right. You know, you either had to be there to see it, or you missed it, or hope that they would rerun it at sometimes. I know that comes as a shock to some of our younger listeners, so I won't really send you into shock and talk about how some of the first articles I ever wrote was on a manual typewriter, and you had to change the ribbon, and if you wanted a copy, you had to use carbon paper, but you had rotary dial phones, you know. But those things existed, and it made us the people that we are today. And what a wonderful Christmases we had back then. You remember some of them, right?
Oh, absolutely. Well, and I got my start on manual typewriters, taught typing for a while. But Jim, thank you so much for explaining to us how Walt brought Christmas and Disney into our lives. And thank you for sharing all of these wonderful stories. And if you want to learn more about these terrific stories that Jim has shared with us, we'll have a link in our show notes for this special holiday episode in our show notes to where you can find some of Jim's books, including his Vault of Walt series, where there is a ton of stories in there, as well as his many, many other books. Jim, thank you so much. I want to wish you a very Merry Christmas. And Craig, thank you. A very Merry Christmas to you and Kylie.
Oh, yes. Thank you all. So, yes, I know I was quiet on this one, but, you know, you get captivated in these stories. You just want to sit back and listen, right?
And in fact, this is your first Christmas in a new house, right?
Yes, it absolutely is.
So I hope you put up a Disney Christmas tree.
It is. I'd say it's about 80%, but our whole front of our house is just full of all the Disney popcorn buckets that have probably been sold over the last 5 or 6 years. So we are Disney-fied out all over the house, as anyone should be. I mean, my problem is the Disney ornaments that they put out are so great that I want to display them year-round. So that's where most of my Disney ornaments actually are. And then the tree just gets filled in with a little bit of the rest. But no, it's impossible. That's the whole point of this. Disney and Christmas are just synonymous with one another. It became a family tradition of mine to come down to Disney World at Christmas every year once my sister started her college program. And after we experienced it once, it was every year after that, essentially, maybe skipping one or two. And that, I don't think that tradition will end. At least I can't foresee it. But yeah, no, I just love it all.
Yeah, in our house, I think every room is decorated with something of Disney every Christmas. You know, we used to have two Christmas trees, and one was completely Disney, the largest tree. And now we only put up one Christmas tree, and it's all Disney. And there's Disney ornaments hanging on all the banisters in the house. And we have the little Hallmark Disney various contraptions and characters that play music, much to our granddaughter's delight. So it's definitely a Disney Christmas in our house as well.
And perhaps you should have the listeners write in how they share their Disney Christmas. You know, do they dress up their dogs as Disney reindeer or Disney snowmen? Those fabulous characters in the Disney parades were created by Bill Justice and Exitencio. And even though the material to make them have changed over the years, that same basic concept of the reindeer with the tongue hanging out of its mouth and the dancing snow and all of that, that actually came from 1961. And it was a very exciting time celebrating Babes in Toyland being released in the movie theaters. And again, you know, I know you and your wife, your lovely and charming wife, Carol, said that you had two Christmas trees, one that was Disney-oriented and one that was more traditional.
Yes.
And when I was growing up, that was the same. We had a Disney Christmas tree, and you could get great ornaments from Hallmark and things like that. And really miss that. But I hope that for all of the listeners, this will be the very happy time of the year for you. And I know we're heading into a new year of changes and concerns. But you know what? Right now, let's enjoy what we have, enjoy our families, enjoy each other, and enjoy Disney.
Thank you. And from all of us here at Connecting with Walt, from me and Craig and our families, to all of you, our listeners, we want to wish you a very Merry Christmas and Happy Holidays. If you would like to read more stories about Walt Disney, his films, his parks, and more by Disney historian and author Jim Corcus, you can find his many books at Amazon.com or ThemeParkPress.com. And we'll have these links in our show notes.
And I highly recommend Jim's Vault of Walt series, which is a collection of stories about Walt Disney and his legacy. A Vault of Walt Volume 2 has a chapter devoted to Santa Walt. And Jim's collection of Vault of Walt just has all kinds of stories spanning the legacy of Walt and his career. A couple of other favorite books of mine by Jim are The Book of Mouse, a celebration of Walt Disney's Mickey Mouse. If you are a fan of Mickey Mouse, and, well, you probably wouldn't be listening to the show if you weren't, this is probably the definitive book about our very favorite mouse. So I'd check this out if I were you. And Craig, you're our resident movie reviewer, film critic for the Diz. I'm sure you've seen Song of the South.
Oh, yeah, I have.
Right? Yeah, so, well, there, Jim wrote a book called Who's Afraid of the Song of the South and Other Forbidden Disney Stories? So if you want the real lowdown on well, the fascinating story about Song of the South and why it has not been re-released onto home video in recently, this is the book for you. And there's also some other fascinating stories in there as well. So, Craig, what did you think of all these stories from our friend Jim Corcus?
It was an absolutely wonderful time just getting to sit there and listen to the amount of stories that he could pull just almost seemingly out of thin air, that he has memorized. I mean, the man is an encyclopedia of information. And my gosh, I could have just sat there for hours listening to it. So I can't wait to talk to him again very soon in the future, get some more stories out of him.
He's fantastic. And we'll definitely have him on the show again sooner than you think. But also, for folks who listen to the Diz Unplugged Disneyland Edition podcast, where I also do history segments, I have a conversation with Jim on the history of Disneyland, especially in its first year of 1956. So you'll want to take a look for that. As well, and he has some really fascinating stories about the early years of Disneyland. Well, you know, though, Craig, those cute little prep and landing elves, Lanny and Wayne, told me they may be delivering yet another very special holiday episode from Jim Corcus on Christmas Eve.
That's what I heard.
So connecting with Walt Dizzers, if you are on Santa's nice list, look for a story from Jim Corcus about a Christmas gift Walt received that changed his life. And that'll be in your Connecting with Walt digital stocking. So thank you for making us a part of your holiday celebration. And remember, I only hope that we don't lose sight of one thing, that it was all started by a man, Walt Disney, and his brother Roy.